Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Amanda Hayes. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Anna. Hello, everybody.
And this week we've been reading The Girl Who Wrote Loneliness by Kyung Suk Shin, translated by Han Yun Jung. But first, let's talk book news. And I haven't seen much about this, Amanda, but I just noticed the other day that the William Dean Howells Medal has been awarded. And it's only awarded once every 5 years for the most distinguished work of American literature. And this year it was won by Richard Powers for his novel, The Overstory. So I just thought that was interesting because I think you would love that.
It's on my list because you loved it, didn't you, Anna?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I had been nervous going in. This was the one that was shortlisted for the Booker Prize, I think in 2018. And I was nervous about it, A, because it looked long, and B, because it was a lot about trees. And I just thought, well, is that really, you know, does that grab me? But it's, of course, all about the characters and it's the interweaving stories. And then the trees give it its heart. And now I'm obsessed with trees.
Yeah. Sophie Cunningham's City of Trees that we read.
Yes, then and she references it in City of Trees. Okay. Yeah, so it has had a real impact on me. So
well, actually, when I arrived, Anna was tending her plants, weren't you?
Well, putting a pot plant back in the shade. Yes, that's about as far as it goes. No, it hasn't translated into real action in terms of gardening, but there you go. So it was really good to see that. And it was interesting looking at the list of past winners, which includes mainly men, but one woman I noticed, Shirley Hazzard.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Who I love her work. And she was Australian actually, but she'd been living in New York. She was a really interesting woman and also worked, I think, with the UN as well and wrote some nonfiction. But I highly recommend The Transit of Venus, but she won the William Dean Howells Medal for The Great Fire a few years ago. Also earlier on in the medal list, Thomas Pynchon, who won it for Gravity's Rainbow, or whether it was just for his body of work, but he declined the award. And reading about him, so then I went on a rabbit hole, down the rabbit hole, reading about Thomas Pynchon, and it was saying how he was meant to win the Pulitzer Prize, I think, for Gravity's Rainbow. And it was a unanimous decision by the judges of the Pulitzer Prize to award it to him. But the Pulitzer Board refused to on the basis that it was obscene and it was turgid and they just didn't get on with it at all. And so they just refused. So no prize was awarded that year. So I love, look, I'm here for the drama. I'm here for the controversy. So there you go. That's the news about the William Dean Howells Medal. But also, Amanda, you had another shortlist.
Yes, a shortlist has just been published for the Undachi Prize, and this is a £10,000 prize given by the Royal Society of Literature for books of the highest literary merit, fiction, non-fiction or poetry, which best evokes the spirit of a place. The shortlisted titles are Surge by Jay Bernard, Small Days and Nights by Tashani Doshi, Underland by Robert McFarlane, which Anna and I read and loved, A Portable Paradise by Roger Robinson, 10 Minutes 38 Seconds in This Strange World by Elif Shafak, which Anna, you read with Annie, didn't you?
Loved that, yeah.
And A Small Silence by Jumoke Verissimo.
Oh, wow.
And also of note, the prize panel, the judging panel, includes Evie Wilde, and we are reading The Bass Rock next time.
Yes, we are.
Her book.
Yeah. Oh, how interesting. Yeah. I haven't seen that prize.
No.
But
it says,
it sounds like a real range of different places.
Yeah,
evoking
a spirit of a place. So that's
Great. So the 10 minutes 38 seconds is set in Istanbul, and it is very evocative of the streets of Istanbul, and not the postcard Istanbul, but not the tourist hotspots, right, but the real behind the scenes of that city. And Underland, of course, goes to the places.
Yes.
It's all about place. And I don't know the other ones at
no,
all.
No, neither do I. So interesting.
How interesting. Mm. Well, now on to our book of the week, The Girl Who Wrote Loneliness by Kyung Suk Shin, translated by Han Yun Jung. And this was on my list because last year I ordered it for Women in Translation Month on the recommendation of Matthew Sharapa, and I ordered it and it didn't really arrive in time. And so it's been sitting on my TBR, and I thought this, because I'm trying to read through my TBR, I thought this is it, we're going to have to do it. And I had read a previous novel of hers, Please Look After Mother, about a year ago and really loved it. Okay. So I recommended this to Amanda, but maybe you can introduce it, Amanda.
Yes, indeed.
More.
The author, Shin, is one of Korea's most widely read and acclaimed novelists. She has written, at least seven of her books have been translated into English from Korean, but she has written more than that. Plus she's written short stories. And Please Look After Mum, which Mom.
Well, yeah, in America it's Please Look After Mom. And then the one I read was Please Look After Mother.
Well, that sounds better to me.
Yeah, to me it does too.
So as Anna said, she really enjoyed that. And that won the Man Asian Literary Prize in 2012. Incidentally, she was the first woman to have won that prize.
Wow.
It also won several prizes in Korea. The book itself, the narrator jumps between her childhood or her teen years, where in the 1980s, where she moves from the countryside where she grew up to Seoul to live with her oldest brother, where she works in a factory or on the assembly line of an electronic factory by day, and she attends school by night. And then other parts of the book are set in the mid 90s when she's a successful novelist. So she goes back and examines her teen years and what that was like. She says the book has been described as semi-autobiographical. She says it's not quite fact and it's not quite fiction. There's a lot of themes explored in this book. For example, the sweatshop conditions of working in the factory. The narrator lives in a very small room near the factory with her cousin and two brothers. And she describes really well sort of the daily drudgery of her life at that stage, which was, you know, waking up early, cooking breakfast for her brothers, working all day, quickly changing, going to night school, coming home, cooking dinner. And there's a lot of political upheaval taking place in Korea in the 1980s. There was a military coup staged by Chun Doo-hwan, and after which he imposed martial law. And there was some democracy protests in 1980s, and most famously the Gwangju Uprising, where the government troops cracked down and killed at least 600 people. And also during that time, people disappeared. They were sent to re-education camps for social purification training, and many of them just never returned. And I think this period in history deeply affected the Korean nation. And it's now that these things are coming up a lot in literature. So the book we read by Hwang Seok-young, At Dusk, also references these events.
Yeah, I thought about that too.
Yeah. So I found the book, in some ways, it was a little bit difficult to follow for me. She jumped back and forth quite frequently. And sometimes I'd be reading and thinking, oh, where is she now? And it was quite slow moving, particularly the chapters about her teen years in the factory. And I found it a little bit, almost a bit tedious, but maybe that was the point. I'm not sure.
That's never a good thing though.
No, I did find it a bit grueling in a way to read, because I just thought, well, come on, pick up the pace a bit. What's happening? Yeah. What's the point of this? But then in a way, I think maybe the criticism should be on me as a reader wanting more action than there was. I'm not sure. I think she expressed herself beautifully, but yeah, it was a bit slow for me.
Yes. Mm. So I found it slow too. I found this book so interesting. So I went in having read Please Look After Mother, which is a bit more straightforward and plot driven and a really accessible beautiful book. Like that book, the ending of that book will always stay with me. And so I, you know, I had high expectations having read that mm-hmm. book, and this is quite different. So I sort of had to stop after a few chapters and think, okay, this is a different experience, you know. And as you say, slow. There are a couple of things that were interesting. One is the structure, and she says at the beginning, this is not quite fact and not quite fiction. And she, for part of the book, it's her in current times on an island or somewhere remote where she is sitting herself down and making herself write this story of what happened at that time where she was working at the factory. Mm. And then the other scenes are back in the factory or in her home life and then into the factory when she was sent to the city. And then she'll jump, as you say, jump back to the current time. And so you do have to adjust back and forth. But that is part of the struggle. I think that reflects her struggle. And she lets you in on this. She shares with you that she is struggling to tell this story. And there's a tragedy at the heart of the story that she is resisting telling because she doesn't want to confront it. And that structure, so, and it is slow, and that's partly because she doesn't want to get there either. But I was with you, I found it slow to read for the most part. But that structure where the author is sort of letting you in on it and saying to you, this is partly fact, normally puts me off. And I don't like a book that's semi-autobiographical. I like fiction where I can lose myself in the story and forget that the author exists, because then it's not, you know, otherwise real life intrudes and kind of jars you out of the story. Or I like memoir if it's a you know, if it's an upfront memoir, but I don't normally like that blend. Mm. But this worked for me in the sense that I found, because she is so honest and the protagonist is a deeply sympathetic character, and she, the author, is really, you have a lot of compassion for her.
Yeah, I certainly felt that.
Yeah, and there's a great sincerity in the way that she says to you, this is a story, I'm an, you know, basically she's saying, I think I'm an author, I've written books and yet I've never written this story and I really should have. And in fact, one of her old school friends writes to her and says, or rings her and says, why don't you write about us, you know. And one of the most moving things in that was that the friend says to her, oh, you think you're different to us. And maybe that's because Kyung Suk Shin, or the protagonist, has become an author, or she thinks she's, you know, above her factory girls, the other factory girls, because she's more intellectual or whatever. But one of the things that struck me after reading the book, or whilst reading it, was that all of those factory girls, they have no identity, they have no name, they're given numbers, and yet they are all different. Of course
they
are.
And they all have dreams.
She's different to them, but they're all different from each other, because of course they all have a dream that is not to be in a factory, or her cousin wants to be a photographer or an artist. And so they...
And I think one of the reasons that, well, she explains why she hadn't written about those factory workers was not because she thought she was elevated or more intellectual. It was because it was a painful process for her to write about those times. And one thing she does really well, I think, is when she does write about those years, the 1980s, she does so through the eyes of the teenage girl that she was. So she's quite naive. Mm. And also you would imagine that at those times the population are not given full access to the facts of what's actually going on. So now we know what was happening during those years. People were disappearing, but they didn't really fully know because they weren't told.
No.
So she feeds that information to us as it would have been, I think.
Yes, that's right. Mm. And some people were more alive to it than others. Some people were more political.
Yeah, like one of her brothers.
Yeah, and that's right. And there's a lot that's unsaid, even though she's really bravely trying to tell the story. But anyhow, so I did find it quite painstaking and quite
slow.
Yeah,
that's the word.
Yeah, and I wasn't expecting it. Having read Please Look After Mother, which is a quicker read, I wasn't expecting it to be as slow. But her writing is really precise, and she as a character is someone I was happy to be in her company. I think she's a very endearing
character. Yeah.
And as you say, naive, very charming, very endearing, and you care about her and you sort of want to look after her almost. And she just slowly builds up this picture of life as a factory girl, and through her telling that story and her story, she sheds light on a wider issue, which is not just in South Korea, I would say also in China and other parts of the world, but this plight of young people and often women, but being sent from their homes. And she was only 16, sort of having to leave their families and go to the city and live in very tough circumstances. And often then they get exploited and so on.
Sort of their only hope of raising their station in life, for want of a better word.
But the same time, it shows that focus on education that they had in South Korea, for better or worse, you know, such as it was. But they really were so driven. And so you get a real insight. I don't think there's another way. I don't think you could read a newspaper article about, you know, the economy in South Korea or the plight of teenagers with mental health problems or self-harming or suicide and really understand it in the way that you do by the time you get to sort of towards the end of this book. But what I found is that because she's quite precise and understated and she's not over-dramatising it, it means that there are some scenes towards the end that have even more impact because of the fact that it hasn't been it's not a showy book. It's not a loud book at all. And so there was a part towards the end. She has one friend. She sort of, her loneliness is highlighted, I think, by the fact that she tries to make friends or does make friends with her neighbour. And their friendship is so flimsy or so
tenuous, isn't it?
So tenuous because they really can hardly spend any time together. And that's one of the things she has missed out on. And she talks about that, like when you're at school and you have friends that you'll go down to the shops and get a milkshake with or something like that. All of those little experiences that that make up a friendship, they don't have time for that. There's no time to be friends with someone really. And so the moments that make up her friendship with the neighbour are so tiny. They're things like hanging out the laundry on their roof or something like that, dropping off a bowl of noodles or whatever. And they're that highlights how lonely she must have been. And then there's a really beautiful line towards the end where she says, and I don't think I'm giving anything away just by saying that she misses her friend, and she says, farewell, or I will always cherish and hold dear how you cared for me. I haven't got the quote with me, but it was just such a moving, like that really broke my heart, you know. And because all the way through the book, you're not getting an overload of emotion, even though she's obviously experiencing a lot of trauma in different ways.
I think it's a cultural thing as well. It's a different sensibility. I mean, I guess if you're looking at the US style culture, it's very sort of individualized, focusing on, you know, me and what's happening to me and my life. And whereas, as you say, it's more understated and subtle. And she's got a humility about her, I think. She doesn't over-dramatise, as you say.
Yeah, so there is a humility, and that's partly that's part of what makes her such a sympathetic character who you really care about. As you say, it was interesting to read it also having read At Dusk, because I feel as if when you read books like that, you start to build up a picture of a place and get an understanding of that economy, that rapid development that they've had in South Korea, and that it's come at that cost, and that that's still developing and still happening now. But it just gives you more of an insight. But yeah, for me, it was a very slow burn, and perhaps now isn't the time that I'm at my best in terms of concentrating on a book that's a bit slower. But it paid off by the end, because I felt that I had this rich experience, and that because she'd built up this picture, I really felt it by the end. I really did feel very moved by the plight of her and of her friend. And I felt for her as she was sitting in her house on the island trying to write this story. Mm. And it was so interesting to see her struggle with coming to terms with it. And I felt like I was there.
Yeah.
So it did pay off, but it's certainly, I think you have to be in that frame of mind.
I absolutely agree. I don't think I was in the right frame of mind either. I was maybe because we are all personally a little bit lonely in this.
Yeah,
this
that's right.
Time.
It's interesting.
Reading about
isn't
someone
it?
Else's loneliness. It was a bit of a struggle for me.
So this is interesting because when we were – Annie and I just did an episode on isolation reads, and I almost got to the point at one stage where I thought, you know, any good book – like what's a good book to read when you're in isolation looking for comfort reads or escape, good escape? And I almost thought, well, any good book – should fit that bill, really, because a good book is so compelling that you know, you do escape with it. But this is actually an example of a book that I think is deeply beautiful but is probably not ideal at this time if you're distracted by the news or you've got anxiety about everything that's going on. It might not fit that bill, but
it didn't fit the bill for me.
No, it didn't work for Amanda. I do recommend it, but that's my caveat. I think I've found the book that doesn't fit with isolation reads, but which I think is a really very rich book and it's one that you could keep talking about and keep studying.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a book that will stay with me.
So that was The Girl Who Wrote Loneliness by Kyung Suk Shin and translated by Ha Yun Jung. And next week, Amanda, I think we're doing The Bass Rock by Evie Wilde. So stay tuned for that. And also Annie and I are doing some isolation reading recommendations. So let us know if you've read The Girl Who Wrote Loneliness. I feel like we're doing all these women in translation, Amanda.
Yeah,
and
I
it's
like
not
that.
It's not August. Probably by August we'll have nothing left for women in translation.
That will never happen.
So let us know what you've been reading. And you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go. You can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Amanda?
I'm on Instagram at Amanda L. Hayes 99.
Fabulous. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.